Every goat can be the star attraction at a 4th of July barbecue. Every
Another
goat.
gasp. Not that pretty little one with the moon spots and the blue eyes. Not her.
Maybe that's what that Nubian weather is destined for. Who knows?
Exactly.
Do you have more pictures of your goats than yourself on your phone? Does your vacation time get spent attending goat shows? Can you have a conversation without bringing up dairy goats? Neither can we. So join us as we talk to the country's best breeders, judges, appraisers, and industry experts about all things dairy goats. We are John Kane and Danielle Caroli. Welcome to Ringside, an American Dairy Goat podcast. What's up, everyone, and welcome to Ringside. As always, I'm John, joined by the awesomest co-host who is not the only one that owns long-eared goats, Danielle Caroli.
What's going on, John?
Did
we do
going
a collective
on?
Gasp?
I think we just did. I think the listeners are shocked at what they just heard. But before they jump to conclusions, it's going to be fine. It's just something to make the wife and kid happy. Calm down, folks.
Oh my gosh. I have to say, it was quite a call when I got that one. Very shocked. Was not expecting that. And I guess I just wore you down.
Oh yeah, that's what happened. All right. No, it's, you know, we got rid of the Guernseys. We have the one that's, you know, the experimental Guernsey type. All Oberhasli look the same, according to my child and my wife. And so instead of having brown goats with correct black markings, we're getting a brown goat with correct black markings that just happens to have long ears from my co-host, Danielle Caroli.
Yes, you are. And it is the litter mate to my doe, Obergetten, who, when she was born, I just decided this was the perfect one. So her name is Obi at the barn. And so you are getting the litter mate.
Yeah. So just for those listening, Nubian coming here, no name yet. It is a wether.
Dun, dun, dun.
And the reason why I needed a wether, why not keep one that was born on my farm and eat it later? I don't know. But yeah, we're selling our mature bucks. There, one's going back to Oz and the other one is being sold. He's kind of worked himself out of a job. And we're bringing in a buck kid. So we needed somebody to join him in the buck pen. So why not a wether and why not a Nubian wether, apparently?
Well, yes. I don't blame you. So I think it was a great decision.
Well, happy wife, happy life, happy child. Things are mild. Like,
there you okay. go.
Alice is going to love him until he smells like the buck that is intact in the fall. And then I'm going to be in trouble. Then she's going to want a doe or something. And that's just not happening.
Well, you probably have a good like year and a half because usually those kids don't get too gross.
Right.
Until that second year. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And at that time, there'll be a lovely Nubian doe kid for her.
Yeah. Enjoy. Well, hopefully my professional life, which can't talk about yet, but hopefully my professional life, I'll be able to maybe keep a small herd of Nubians for her at some point.
Times are changing.
Times are a change. And how are things with you, Danielle, after I just dropped that bomb on everybody?
Well, no bombs to drop here. It's just kind of coasting while we're waiting for the next two does to get closer to their due date. That doe I talked about on the last podcast did kid. She had two babies. So I was wrong in the assumption that she came back into heat that 21 days after her initial breeding. And when that udder came in, we were correct that she was going to kid. So
she was just being a hoe.
More like her owner couldn't tell if she was in heat or not.
Well, she stood for the buck, so yeah, she's
No. So she's a fun one. She has very silent heats, and I thought she was in a very silent heat, and once again wasn't really interested. Anyway, long story short, we have babies on the ground.
Okay, so she needed an adult, is what you were saying for that second go around. Okay, gotcha.
No, but moving on.
Well, congratulations on babies. Did you end up with a doe kit?
So that is where I got my Obergetten, my Obi. So she came out looking very...
I'm saying it like that.
Why?
It's Obergetten, not Obergetten. You're like Obergetten. You're like, I don't know, you're putting like a London twist on it.
All right, I'll have to start working on my pronunciation. You of do. The name.
It's Agda, it's fine. All over again. Well, what color is Obergetten?
She is looking like an Oberhosley.
Woo! Let's go. Okay, perfect.
Yeah, she even is complete with the dark brown ears, which I guess Obers have black ears typically, don't they?
They have brown ears. Have you not been paying attention?
Not at this moment. Kidding season has totally destroyed me. So.
That's okay. You're forgiven. Yeah. No. Black ears are a no-no.
Okay.
Nope. Yep. So no, perfect. Well, do we have Adka news?
I don't have anything. Do you?
All is quiet on the Western front. I think we should introduce our awesome guest that people are probably like, dude, we read the title. Get him in on this conversation. And I will. As everybody knows, this time of year, we are so often focused on the new additions and figuring out if they are going to move our herd in the right direction going forward. Maybe it's the fact that they seem to take up so much time or that they are the future of the herd, those kids. But so often the conversations and thoughts tend to be consumed with those kids. However, this is also when we see new mammary systems develop, and we as herd owners often have to make choices on whether a milker has a place in our herd going forward. Add in the fact that variables such as lactation number, production, number of kids they had, stage of lactation, it can heavily influence what that udder looks like. We figured we needed to talk about how we can evaluate the mammary system and make the important decisions of who is going to stay in the milk string and who is going to find a new herd. So today, we are joined by Mark Baden of Olentangy Alpines to take another deep dive in the mammary system of the dairy goat. Welcome back, Mark Baden.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be back.
I'm excited. I'm sure everybody else that saw the title and saw you're on this is excited. I can't wait to take a deep dive. But before we do, let's kind of hear about how your kidding season's going for you and how the farm life is.
Well, I'm halfway through kidding. I had another doe kid yesterday, so I've got about a 3.5 week break, which is good because in about 2.5 weeks, we have the Washington State Spring Fair, and we're having a dairy goat show just for the second year. The Washington State Fair is always in September, the large competitive fair, but the Spring Fair is just, it's a real small show, you know, a fuzzy show. So that's in a couple of weeks. So I've got a break, and then my yearlings will freshen, and then those that didn't settle AI will freshen after that. So I'm milking 7 now, and I just got home from an exciting IVF ET kid weekend. And I have a kid next to me in a box in my kitchen for this past week. So I was fortunate to get a kid out of that experience. So kidding, I can't complain.
That's awesome to get a kid out of that. How many does did you have, or I guess embryos, did you have up for that IVF experience, or did you just have one that you knew of, like planned on?
Well, you know, in one of your, and you've had Stephanie Rovey, who's our host out here for IVF, on before to explain her process. And so, you know, these were all frozen embryos. They weren't any fresh. So these were frozen from 2 years ago. And so we had quite a few recipient does, but in the end, you know, like she said in her podcast with you, she still doesn't quite know the secret sauce. And so that's why it's still, you know, in the learning phase as far as what makes a great recip, what makes a great donor dough for high grade embryo production. And so it was, you know, I'd be on the moon if I got one dough kid. I got a buck kid, but I got a kid, and so I'm happy. But awesome. You know, overall, you know, I think that there were more bucks than does born, but there were doe kids for some lucky breeders. So I think that in the future, you'll see some more incredible sires in multiple breeds out representing their pedigrees. Number of these are repeat breedings. My buck's a repeat breeding. And I was talking to you privately. I'm thrilled because he's a repeat breeding of a very nice buck that I made and sold, but he was never collected. And so I never had any access to that semen. So I've got a second shot now with this one. No, it's a great experience, but you know, it's kind of like Goat Vegas. You know, you put a lot of money on the table and the house may take, you know, you don't always get to go partying with it. So.
Fair enough.
I don't want to say how my personal odds were pretty dismal, but I got a kid, and so that's my silver lining. That's what I'm going to say.
For sure.
No, that's a great silver lining. We've had you on in the past to talk about connecting the data of the performance programs with your breeding program. We have two great episodes that if our listeners haven't listened to, I suggest they go check out the 40 trifecta and 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And those conversations were deep into using the data of linear appraisal to shape your herd goals. But for so many, decisions need to be made earlier in the year and in that doe's lactation. And sometimes we can't go out to shows, we can't get appraised. So we have to, at the time when we have to make these decisions, and we have to figure out how we can all look at our own milk string and figure out which does should stay, which does have bought themselves another year to kind of see their potential, and which does need to go. So I guess a good place to start with is, can you kind of quickly describe what an ideal mammary system on a dairy goat should look like?
Well, and of course, when we're talking about ideals, everyone has their own personal perspective. But when we look at all of the programs that the American Dairy Goat Association has, the consistent thing that we see, whether it's in showing, type confirmation, and milk production, DHIR, it's a functional mammary system because these are animals that should milk. And so while you need all the pieces, you need the production. And so being functional. And so what is the definition of function? Well, being productive relative to her age without any negative detriment to her body form, that she's productive. You know, as a judge, as you know, Danielle, you know, the goal of the unified scorecard is to aid us in the selection of the type of dairy goat that can function efficiently over a long productive lifetime. And so when you look at long productive lifetime, right, this conversation we'll have today, you know, first fresheners, you know, well, she hasn't had a long productive lifetime, you know, and when you go to goat shows and judges say, is she a first or second freshener in 2-year-olds? And haven't you always scratched your head? Well, what are they doing with that information? What does it matter if it's a first or it's a second? Should it matter? Yeah, it should. Is this doe already have a completed full 305-day lactation? So function, being productive, she needs to milk. Because, you know, if we look at our cousins and cows, if that cow doesn't milk, it's going to get culled. Because dairymen, you know, they make their living off of a milk check. And we have a lot of members, you know, and from myself, I mean, you know, I've worked on dairies, but, you know, I'm a hobbyist. And so I don't depend on a milk check. And now that I'm older in my career, and I have other personal goals in my life as far as traveling. And well, traveling is kind of hard to be away from your goats and have them milking. And so, you know, I sacrifice having complete lactations on my goats that freshen in April and May. I don't try. And that's my personal choice to do that. And so if you're a breeder who needs complete lactations to really determine is she functional enough, well, but your own experience in knowing what a typical lactation is, maybe when you're looking for breeding stock, you know, just ask those questions of people. It's like, oh, I see she only milked 2,100 pounds. Well, how many days in milk? So it's real important for listeners and new members to, you know, learn the basics of how to read a lactation record. So that way they understand. So just remember that with lactation records, as well as appraisal scores, there always should be an age associated when you're advertising those type that type of data. So it's the age at freshening for milk production. So if she freshened at 1 year, 11 months old, you can say, oh, she's probably a first freshening two-year-old, or she could be a second freshening two-year-old, but that's her two-year-old lactation. On appraisal, it's their age on the date that they were scored. So, you know, you have to kind of do a little bit more looking. But if a herd is on milk test through the CDCB website, you can see what the freshening date is. So it takes a little bit more research to look. Or you can go to agrigenetics.org and look at progeny to see a fresh, you know, if there were any progeny registered out of the doe that year. Well, you know what her freshening date was because that's her kid's, you know, birth date. So sometimes it takes another step to research that. But you always should look at, and if you're new, you know, ask questions, you know, to how to read a lactation record. So they're always the age the doe was when she freshened, then it's the number of days in milk, then it's the pounds of milk, then butter fat followed by protein. Sometimes they'll list the pounds of butter fat and the percentage, but not always the percentages there. So that's kind of the information. And then when you're on CDCB, toward the end of that, there'll be a data collection rating afterwards. And also you can see the test type plan that goat was under. So was she on standard test? Was she on an innovative test plan, an ITP? Those types of things. So being functional is so important in all of our programs, you know, whether it's showing our linear appraisal program is about functional type. It's our functional type program. So the word function is in there as well. And obviously milk production, well, they've got to function. You need the milk. There needs to be milk in the bucket. And if there isn't, she doesn't function. So our association and our industry demands these goats be functional. And that includes miniature breeds as well. They're dairy goats and they can function efficiently as well. So being productive, but also if your goal is showing, it should be attractive and aesthetically pleasing. So when you look at all the different aspects of the scorecard, you know, that's why the different point allotment is the way it is. There's more points for rear udder than fore udder. There's the most points for udder support. The smallest is teats, but it gets talked about a lot. You know, balance, quality, and symmetry is kind of like, you know, that's a lot of stuff in there. And sometimes you see some imperfections, but it doesn't get mentioned a whole lot because in America, in our shows, we don't milk out very often. We used to. In my show career, I was at a show, I remember distinctively, at the Big Badga show in Butler, Pennsylvania in the 90s. And Jennifer Bice, she's a judge emerita now, but I remember Jennifer was the judge. And before she named her grand champion, we had to milk out our goats and we had to bring them back in. And then she picked her grand champion in her reserve because she wanted to see the quality of the mammary system, how much that doe milked. And that was in the 1990s. And in fact, I can tell you that was in 1998 because that doe of mine that was a grand champion, she was second udder at the national show in St. Paul, Minnesota in 98. So that recently, you know, and it wasn't uncommon that you have to milk out. But that was in a day where we didn't have triple ring shows or even double ring shows necessarily. Mm-hmm. There was but function and so being productive relative to her age. And of course, you have to go out there and milk them every day and see them. You want to be pleased with what you see. And you also want a mammary system that isn't hard to milk. I mean, really for me, for my setup, and I milk by machine from behind. And so I can see all the aspects of mammary system, particularly rear udder, the medial and teat placement and the udder depth. But I want to like what I see because my view is from behind. And in the commercial setting, most dairymen are milking from behind as well. Maybe a three-quarter herringbone sometimes. But so you should like what you see because that makes going out there in bad weather or cold weather, you know, more enjoyable. So to me, that's the ideal mammary system that that functions and even as a hobbyist milks enough that if she doesn't satisfy my primary goal, but she can satisfy a secondary goal where I don't have to sacrifice selling her for less because she does perform at a high functional rate. I still, you know, whether she may not be aesthetically pleasing or as competitive as I would like to have, but I can still sell her for a good market rate for a commercial herd.
Well, let's pedal back for a second here and mention your herd. When are you starting to evaluate the mammary system of a doe that's in your herd?
Well, you know, like everyone, you get excited, but you know, when they're a month before and you give them their pre-kitting shots and you start to clip up the udder a little bit to see what, you know, what are we in for here? You know, that's just a lot of hype. And, you know, you get excited and they, you know, the whole udder involution and how this mammary system goes from being totally dry to being productive and can be milking. I have, so in my herd right now, I'm currently milking two first freshening two-year-olds or long yearlings. They'll be two by the end of the year. And I've had one milk test already, and the one milked, I think, 12.8 pounds. The other one milked like 8 pounds. So there's a 4-point difference in poundage. Their components are similar. They're very related does that are the same sire, and these are the first mammary systems out of this buck. And so you know, you get really excited. But really kind of how I look at mammary systems is, you know, you have to be a little patient, and then you really kind of know what you're going to get with this udder at about 30 to 45 days. So lactation data, you know, we consider how long does it take for a dairy goat to ramp up to her peak production? And you really need to give them just a little bit for that udder to expand. And so for me, I like to have at least two milk tests because I do participate in a DHIR. And I like to see that normal lactation curve, how it ramps up pretty quickly. And you can look at traditional lactation curves on the CDCB website for each breed. There's lactation curves for each of our purebred breeds there. And you'll see that by day 45 in milk, you'll see that's the peak. And then you're looking for persistency. Persistency would be how long they can keep that peak production, you know, and obviously temperature and management conditions, you know, and impact that, or if you start showing and stressing that doe out and traveling her, maybe she doesn't keep that peak production. But I'd say really, because you're going to go from a doe that's totally dry on a first freshener to this mammary system that could have 8 to 12 pounds, I mean, that's a lot of volume. And yes, in some cases that mammary system grows to a point where it looked very promising, and then, you know, at day 45, day 60, it's like, yeah, it's beautiful in production, but it's not going to be beautiful in the ring. You know, maybe that's too much. Or you have a doe, it's like, well, it's really cute. I wish there were more of it. I think that it's really fair for you to look at a doe, even if you're not on milk tests, but if you're on milk tests, you really should have two milk tests to look at. And another reason I say that, if you are participating in all the programs, you want to have a doe have at least 40 completed days into her lactation on test, and then her lactation will be used for her sire summary. So what that means is before you sell her or take her off test, you want her to have passed her 40th day in milk and then have a milk test before she leaves. If you sell her before then or she's off test, that lactation record won't be used in the sire summary. So if having records like that are important to you, if you want your bucks to get their plus awards, be a plus plus buck, if you want your bucks to be superior genetic when those awards are able to be generated in the future, you know, having that data. But also, if you want to know, is this young sire really, you know, doing what you predicted he would be, why you purchased him? So having that in mind, whether your goals are commercial and production only, or if your goals are for type or showing, you know, really giving these animals at least 1 month, 30 to 45 days is really important. And by then you can kind of say, yeah, she can hang out another year and we'll see if she's my next year goat. I know that's a popular phrase some of us like to use, or if she's, you know,
she's going to be right at the head of the line right now, or she could be in the head of someone else's line, that kind of thing. So for me, I mean, you get excited before they kid, but I'm looking for the normal trajectory. You know, week one, and I have alpines, and so I'm looking at by day 5 to day 7 is when I usually see a big jump in production. You know, depending on how rough the kidding is, I'm looking for milk production to increase. And then day 5 or 6, it's like, oh yeah, you're going to be, you know, a 12-pound milker, you know, and then by, you know, week 3 or 4, then they're hitting that. And so that's kind of when I start, what I'm looking for in the first month. But really, if I'm, you know, if I know I'm going to be doing a lot of judging or traveling, or when I used to appraise and I was going to be gone, and I knew I needed to have my milking numbers down to a manageable level for chore help. And it's like, okay, I would still say, well, I know this is like my chore help would say, why is this goat here? She doesn't look like the rest of your goats. I go, oh, just wait. You know, I got to see this goat. I can't get rid of her yet. And sometimes it's been the right call, and that goat, it's like, yep, I knew it. And other times it's like, then they'll come back for milk tests, you know, the next month. It's like, oh, did you sell that goat? And it's like, yeah, I did. You know, so about 30 to 45 days is what I think everyone should strive to. I know that everyone has different demands on their time and their resources that they can't, but I think that you'd see over 10 years in dairy goat hobby, you'd see that that's really worthwhile data you're giving yourself and your breed colleagues by proving out sires that way.
Awesome. So in your experience, what aspects of the mammary system do you think improve over lactation's age capacity, like teats, medial suspensory ligament, et cetera?
Right. So, you know, I guess it's a matter of like, they all can change, you know, do they change for the better or the worse, right? Mm-hmm. So I guess I would start with like, I'd start with like rear udder, right? So pretty much the rear udder, it's 7 points, you know, rear udder height, RUH is a linear trait. And then a rear udder arch, RUA is another linear trait. A rear udder arch is the least heritable trait of any of the 13 linear traits that we have. And so basically what they freshen with, pretty much that's what you got, unless there's a catastrophic failure, maybe later in life, right? You know, a rear udder falls because maybe she has very soft texture and she's an excellent milker. And I'll say this, true story. I've had, I think, 6 different goats that I've bred that have had, you know, honest lactations of over 4,000 pounds a year. And, or I shouldn't say 4,000, that have milked over 20 pounds on a milk test day. Okay. 20 pounds. That's a lot of weight to have over 10 pounds of milk in 12 hours. Mm-hmm. And some goats can handle that, like, you know, in spades, and I've held my breath on some goats. I go like that. I go like, and so then the next year, you know, it's like, okay, we had a great lactation. She milked great. And you know, she's hard to dry off or whatever. And it's like, and then you freshen her again and she comes in gangbusters again. And I've had different doses. It's like, yeah, that's nice, that production, but it's too much sometimes. And, mm-hmm. and so in my history of the like 5 does that I can quickly remember, you know, 3 of them couldn't hold it, you know, and so later in life that I didn't show them. They were great brood does, but they weren't goats that I was going to go to the national show and they were going to get an udder placing because, you know, they couldn't fill the rear udder because that's a lot of weight and strain on that ligament. So do you say it's udder support, the medial's fault, or do you say it's the rear udder's fault? Well, that can kind of depend on a couple of things, but when they're already milking a lot, sometimes what you see in rear udder, so we have this secondary trait in the linear program, rear udder side view. Now, rear udder side view does not exist in cattle classifications. This is a dairy goat thing. And that's because in the 70s when we had classification and then in the 80s, when we were starting to develop the linear appraisal program in 1988, we had all these protruding rear udders. And so that was really kind of systemic in dairy goats that you'd see at dairy goat shows. And so sometimes when some of these goats, it's like, well, if this goat, all of a sudden she has great lactation and then she has quads or something, and she's really, where's the milk going to go? Well, the udder is either going to drop an udder floor below the hock, the forder is magically going to grow beyond where it used to be. And it probably isn't, unless it truly is an exceptional quality forearder, because forearders that have a break or a pocket, they're just going to bulge more, or the rear udder is going to bulge beyond the vulva. And so rear udder, right, it could fall and it could protrude. Otherwise, with normal wear and tear, you know, every year this doe milks roughly about the same, a strong lactation curve, your rear udder height isn't going to change a lot. So if she freshens and you say to yourself, it looks like an A-frame, you know, mammary system, you know, from behind, it's narrower at the top than at the bottom, you know, or it's, you know, it's an upside down V shape, or is it nice U shaped? It's as wide at the top as it is, you know, in the widest part of the mammary system. So really for me, you know, over lactation. So when you look at rear udder, it's like, hey, if I like the rear udder, as a first freshening 2-year-old, such as my two, these two first fresheners are really great examples. One has an incredible rear udder arch, and the other one has an incredible height. And the arch, it's like, you need another freshening, but you might make it to 40-40-40. And so one of those things. So I start with rear udder. The other thing that you look at from behind, you know, so medial and udder support. So medial and linear appraisal is simply, in cattle classifications, that's called udder cleft. And that is how it is scored in ADGA's linear appraisal program. It's the amount of cleft to the udder floor. 1 inch of cleft on a standard breed goat is a 25 score. Half an inch on a Nigerian dwarf is a 25 score. A totally flat udder floor with no definition whatsoever is a 15. You know, 2 inches is a 35. And so what you can see on that, and so some stereotypic, it's like, oh, that doe has, you know, everything's so nice if she just had a little bit more medial. And that might pull those teats in a little. Well, it might. So sometimes with more production, you'll see, and also kind of depends on the udder tissue as well, you might see a slight increase in cleft in the medial, in the total udder support. So what I was saying about, you know, is the udder floor going to, is with increased production, you know, where will all that milk go? Does it expand uniformly? And, you know, it was a nice small grapefruit udder, and then it became a volleyball size, and then it became a basketball size, you know, or did one thing get bigger and not the other? You know, it's like, oh, well, she never protruded beyond the rear udder, beyond the vulva last year or the year before. Well, guess what? That's how that goat is made, you know, or did everything, you know, in a normal capacity increasing way. So when you're looking at medial, I think you rarely see a medial failure. I think that you can, with additional lactations and more months into a first lactation, you can see an improvement in medial. So you can see some more udder cleft. And I know I see that in my goats often. Udder depth. So that's the height of the udder floor above the hock. The udder floor, and so that's UD is the linear trait for udder depth. And that is the biggest change you see with additional lactations. So it's very common to see shallow udder floors that are 6 inches or higher above the hock would be in the 40s to 45 in a linear udder depth trait. And that's something that you'll see very often. Interesting, when you compare dairy goats, the American Dairy Goat Association, or even the Canadian Goat Society's classification program, compared to the Holstein USA or Jersey, their classification program in mammary system. So in mammary systems in cattle are worth 40 points, but udder depth is 25% of that. Udder depth is 10 points. And so you think, how many times you've been at a goat show and these small cute udders win? Now in cows, that wouldn't be the case because those aren't highly functional. And so right. I think a lot of times that's one of the things that, you know, you can kind of judge, you could evaluate and experience judges and, you know, are, because the function, the milk, they've got to milk to be a dairy goat. Cause if they don't milk, they all can be a meat goat. Mm-hmm. Every goat can be the star attraction at a 4th of July barbecue.
Gasp. Not that pretty little one with the moon spots and the blue eyes. Not her.
Maybe that's what that Nubian weather is destined for. Who knows?
Exactly.
So I mean, but that's that. But so that's kind of the funny thing of, you know, when you look at our different programs, and then you just kind of have to look at how that's used. But when you said, you know, that was a good way to start this off. You know, function. Don't disregard function. And so sometimes it's not pretty, but boy, at least she gets in the door. She represents the industry. She represents dairy goats. Because if there's no milk, you know, it's like, that's not a dairy goat.
Right.
But yeah, utter depth. So that's kind of, you know, for conversation, oh, you know, in the evening at goat shows with a beer or something, to like say, yeah, utter depth, you know, like, because where do we put that on our scorecard? It's a linear trait. But, you know, where is it? So probably balance, quality, and symmetry, because, you know, you're looking for, you know, where's the milk, right? You know, it's kind of like, well, it should be this, you know, roundness and shape. So udder depth, that's what changes the most. Because obviously, as I said, you know, a goat that's just, you know, if you have to make your decision, do I call this first freshener or do I keep her at 1 week? It's like, well, yeah, she might be a 45 or you got linear appraised. Because maybe you're getting appraised in May, at the end of May or beginning of June, and she freshened May 15th. Well, she has enough milk to be scored. And then you're going like, oh, no, don't score her at 50. Well, she is. She isn't milking yet. But that's why you look at, but don't be afraid of that number. Don't be ashamed. It is what she was that day, and that's where you educate your customers and your fan base of, well, when you read her appraisal score for udder depth, you can see she was scored at, you know, 2 years, 0 months. So she just turned two and, oh, look, she freshened. That's when she freshened. So there's ways to put it into context, right. You know, that, oh yeah, she's a first freshener. I play this game all the time with people. I'll just say different. Now, tell me if this is a first freshening, you know, 1 month first freshening, or this is the national champion, you know? And so if I say udder depth 45, everyone should say that ain't the national champion of any breed, because that goat doesn't milk. Right. A 45 or 50 does not milk. Where's the milk? If you have a top 10 doe that has an udder depth of 40 or 45, you should scratch your head. Where's the milk? Because the milk's going to go somewhere. You know, and so that's why, and I've taken a lot of flack about my personal philosophy of 40 trifecta, and I'm going, that's okay. I mean, everyone's going to have their own belief system, and, you know, it's what makes me happy going out into the barn and gives me a challenge to find the right, you know, genetics to make improvements in different ways. But you can impact that. It's like you can have a mammary system that milks and have high volume of milk. If you're breeding for, you know, it's the whole thing of like, I was listening to your, and Daniel, you said something kind of funny. You were saying putting a smart car in a warehouse or something like that. Yeah. I thought it was kind of funny. And so this udder depth, and that's what I wanted to talk about. So udder depth could be a smart car, you know, in an airplane hangar, and that's okay if she's a first freshener. And if you know your doe lines, maybe she's a first freshener. And by accident, you know, oh yeah, she freshened at 13 months. I should have freshened her later. Or she freshened at 11 months and she only had a single. You know, I mean, so in that case, it's like, well, if you've got the time to wait and you like the everything else, bloodline, maybe you got to wait a little bit. So you have to kind of put it into context of what management conditions she was on.
Yeah, well, I have a doe that perpetually gives me singles, and it's annoying. Oh, okay. So, but on the flip side of that, you know, what improves? What about what gets worse? I mean, are you've seen a bajillion goats as a former appraiser, and you obviously have beautiful mammary systems in your own herd. But what do you see that gets worse over time on a consistent basis?
Well, I would say a lot of people don't really understand four udders.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to be like, we need to talk about four udders. So thank you. Okay. Yeah, Let's go.
Because the one thing that I always found really rewarding was in doing appraisal, and a lot of people, and myself included, you know, early in my career, I, you know, definition of Ford, it's the amount of mammary system in front of the teat, right? Okay. But you have to look at it two different things. So you take the teat and then trace the mammary system on the bottom side until it meets the rear barrel. However, but that lateral side attachment, how, where does that connect to the body wall? And so by having a truly functional lactating forerudder, and this is, and I use this often in my judges' reasons, I don't hear a lot of other people, but it's one of the approved terminology, afforded is fuller and wide to the side. What does that mean? Right. So it's not that it's pocketed and that, not that it's a skin flap, but that there is milk the whole way across and to the side. And that's what a 50 is. I mean, that's why you should want a 40 or higher in forerudder. I mean, because that security of that lateral extension along the body wall and forerudder that is full all the way up into the flank, that ain't going nowhere. I mean, that's not going anywhere. You're not going to see, even if you have the worst rear legs that are attached to the hips on that rump that you talked about last week on your podcast about rump, you can have the worst rear legs, but at least the mammary, the forerudder extension is going to keep that there. Yes, it's going to get bruised a little from hockey rear legs. So you could have maybe not the best udder texture because of that bruising, because of the mechanics of not as structurally correct rear legs. But that forerudder is going to really help a highly functional mammary system hold up longer because it has greater surface area to attach to the body wall, you know, because of her udder support, you know, the medial, that, and, you know, that medial ligament, you know, attaching to the pelvis. But I would say forerudder. So if you have a forerudder that cuts backward toward the flank with more milk, it's just going to pocket and bulge more.
Wait, you put your hand in that thing.
Yeah. And then often what you'll see is, or people say, oh, look at the other side. It's prettier on the other side. Okay. Here's a hint. If you ever got a goat that is prettier on the one side, but not on the other, guess what? It's a broken forerudder. Guess what? It's not full and wide to the side. It's got a flap. Yeah. I mean, it's laughable. I mean, but I know, I mean, I'm sure I said the same thing 40, 30, 25, 20 years ago too, because it's everyone wants to be proud of what they're bringing into the ring. Everyone, you know, and everyone wants to make improvements, but that's why don't settle. I mean, you can do it in every breed. You can do it. And so I'm sorry right now. I mean, if you use linear and you're using anything with the 20s and a forerudder, well, good luck to you. Because there's better out there. And so forerudder extension, a truly exquisite forerudder, and I know Dr. Kurt will say it's low-hanging fruit, but it sure is pretty to look at, you know, the forerudder. Yeah, you can see it, but you should be excited by it because that's really helping and support. But forerudders that are, you know, one side's better than the other should make you kind of scratch your head. And forerudders that cut back, that are broken, you know, and so those just get more noticeable with more milk and more volume. So I would say that is what gets worse. And then, you know, if you never started off with a good rear udder and then you had to compensate by putting more hours of milk in her for that mammary system to get competitive, well, guess what? The older she gets, the harder it will be, you know, and if her rear legs get worse with age, that will just manifest your eye to look up at that low or narrow rear udder even more. But I would say what gets worse is it's more obviously less attractive would be the forerudder. Clearly, teat placement doesn't change a lot, and even teat length doesn't change a lot. Teat diameter, you know, you can have a teat blow out, and that does change. And you see that sometimes that shows where one teat's wider than the other, or if, you know, people's management style is they dam raise. But pretty much after a dose, you know, 45 days in milk, you know, that's probably what you're going to have that whole lactation. That's what the teats are. So teats don't really change a whole lot. Forerudder changes. Rear udder can catastrophically fall. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And really, your rear udder width, it's either always going to be a pointy rear udder or it always was nice and wide, you know, whether you have a lot of milk or a little milk. I mean, I'm looking at a 9-year-old doe out there who's fresh in 9 times, and she's been best udder in show at multiple state fairs, and she's been first starter at the national show. And while she doesn't milk a lot now at nine, but let me tell you, that rear outer arch is up there and out there, you know. And I look at that and I go, yeah, I'm going to keep your daughter because that's what I'm breeding for. And so things that change or get worse, obviously utter depth doesn't get worse. It usually gets better unless it falls below the hock and it's so low that you can't get a bucket under it and it needs a support bra, you know. So that obviously could get worse, but when those get worse, it's not even a conversation. People don't bring them out, you know, or they call them or they sell them to a commercial enterprise kind of a thing. But I would say for most herds that are looking for improvement and for show ring success, you know, you really can see four udders. And that's why, you know, for judges or even showing, you know, you should, you know, for a true evaluation, you know, judges should look at both sides of the goat, not just the show side, you know. So I was try to make sure that they turned the other way because sometimes you miss something. And forder is one of those things where it might be pretty on the show side, but what about the other side? That's what I would say is the one thing that might get worse with additional lactations and higher volume of milk.
I want to ask about the four outer really quickly. It might even be a quick one word answer to this, but what are your thoughts? Do you think a four outer with a pocket with more maturity and increase of body, that'll become a more smoothly blended four udder? Do you think that ever happens?
It happens to a small degree, yes. But that quality is, it's always there. So Dr. Acton did a study of fours a very long time ago, and this is even under our old scorecard. So this would be in like 1987 before when she went to Washington State University Vet School, and they did all these cross-section dissections of four udder, and was it just, you know, fat skin or was it actually productive lactating tissue? And so when you think of all of the resources that we have for our members, right? And how we're trying to guide you as far as like, and use that terminology in show ring judging, a forder that is fuller and wide to the side and not just a skin flap. If she started with a skin flap and she got deeper, yes, then it's not milk. That's right. Her rear barrel. So, mm-hmm. So yes, it will be smoother appearing. Yeah. But that same goat, if she all of a sudden magically comes into a 20 pound a day lactation, okay, where will that milk go? She's going to protrude beyond the vulva. It can't go forward. I mean, that's the thing, you know, you have to have this conversation with yourself and just be honest, you know, with yourself. It's like, okay, yeah, she got deeper. Yeah, that pocket isn't as noticeable. Well, the forder didn't magically go up to the navel. It didn't. Right. It's being stopped. It doesn't have the connective tissue there magically. And so that's like, you know, funny stories of production. It's like, oh, they had a internal cavity in the body. You know, that's how this goat milks, you know, 6,500 pounds. That's not anatomically possible. No. So yeah. But I mean, I dance around that, and that's much longer explanation because of course it's, you know, to a degree, well, sure, it'll be visually appearing to be smoother, it will appear to be filled in, but how long is that forder? Is that forder going to be a 40? No, that forder probably is a 30 at best. And if that's what you're breeding for, good for you. You accomplish your goal.
I want to focus on the medial suspensory ligament for a bit here. Can you walk us through what it is, what we want to see, and tips to evaluate that?
Right. So the medial suspensory ligament, that ligament is attaching to the pelvis, you know, on the underside. So when you look at the rump, and that's what gives the mammary system its overall shape, and that it holds the mammary system up into the escutcheon, high to the body wall, and the udder floor above the hock. And so obviously when you look at your kids just born, it's like, well, there's just two bumps of teats there and it's flat. And, you know, when they get a little older, you can rub your thumb on there. And sometimes you can, you know, you can actually, oh yeah, you can feel the definition there. And so once in a while, you'll see a precocious kid, you know, in the fall or a precocious dry yearling. And so you can, and you'll see, oh yeah, there's some definition. But that ligament, right, it goes from a totally dry goat, you know, through utter involution to, oh, 12 pounds of milk. Mm-hmm. So obviously there's some give to that ligament, right? Obviously it has some elasticity to go. It obviously, if it were linear proportion of it, exponential, well, then it would go all the way to the ground. And so there's a genetic maximum that, you know, your doe has. That ligament obviously has a little bit of stretch to it. And then that's pretty much the suspension where it's like, well, that's how long that ligament is, you know, based on how this animal is growing. Obviously, when you look at your kids and for people who do, they weigh their kids, or for people who measure their goats. And, you know, I know there are, you know, in appraisal, we measure stature at the wither and we measure rump width from the thirls. So you can, you know, and I've done other tests on different things. Well, right. As this goat, a balanced goat that is in proportion is growing. And so as long as this goat's growing, but you don't know internally how long that ligament is. And so that ligament, right, when they're freshening, even a goat with a flat outer floor has a medial. You know, and so people say, oh, she doesn't have a medial. Well, that's being lazy in terminology, but we all say it, right? Judges say it, appraise, you know, oh, she needs more medial. It's like, maybe she needs more production. Maybe she's a lousy functioning doe. Maybe she's a lazy milker. Maybe she's got really tight skin. You know, it's not this nice, you know, tissue paper texture. You know, maybe she had a C-section. Maybe she aborted. Maybe she's, you know, she only had a single. That medial's there, but she, or maybe your management, your feed management or parasite management isn't that great. And she just isn't putting milk in there to stress that mammary tissue to expand. And the medial is going to stay there. And then that udder texture will then expand around the side. So there's a number of different things. So this conversation is, you know, in the other two talks I've had with you, we accept a certain basic premise, right? We're talking about, you know, finite details of mammary system, but we assume basic management needs and feed needs have been met, right? So, I mean, right, will this get better? Well, as long as you feed them, you know, but if you don't feed them, then they got to put all their, you know, all those calories into maintaining their body. And so you can't really thoroughly evaluate the mammary system. So, and that's why, you know, being on milk test is always great to evaluate your herd management. You know, have I, you know, because you have different ways of record keeping, and always good about cleaning my barn and doing things, you know, the week before milk test, because I don't want to be embarrassed for my tester to see stuff and I got to trim feet and that. So that kind of helps. But, you know, so as long as you're feeding them and with normal care, with nothing unusual, you know, we would anticipate that you'd be able to see this production. But the medial, right, there's some give to it, but even does with flat outer floors, they have a medial, because if they didn't, well, if there would be zero medial, there'd be nothing to hold that mammary system up into the escutcheon and underneath the rump.
Woo-hoo-hoo. Future John here coming at you, editing this podcast. And I got to tell you, I'm having a tough time making this into just an hour, maybe an hour 10. I want to give you the full experience of this interview. So what we're doing is we're making this Mark Bate and Udders talk into two separate episodes. That's right. Two separate episodes. So this is part one. You're going to get part two next week. So we're going to close out this episode. Don't forget to comment, like, share, subscribe, rate us.
Mark, if people wanted to find you and your herd on Facebook and online, where can they do that?
So I'm at olentangyalpines.com, and I have a Facebook page under olentangyalpines. And if you can't understand when I say Olentangy, it's the Ohio River Valley that goes through the Ohio State University in Columbus, Ohio. So that's the name of the river, Olentangy.
Perfect. And again, thank you so much for being on. This has been amazing, and I can't wait to listen to it again.
Sure, no problem. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Danielle, if folks wanted to find us on the old interwebs, where can they do that?
You can find us on the web by looking up DairyGoatPodcast.com. You can find us on Facebook by searching Ringside and American Dairy Goat Podcast. We are on Instagram and TikTok. If you search Ringside Podcast, we will pop up, and you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. While you're there, be sure to subscribe, leave us a rating and a review. It really helps us, and we appreciate it.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, everybody, this has been Ringside, an American Dairy Goat Podcast. I'm John.
And I'm Danielle.
And I guess I'm a newbie and owner now. We'll catch you on the next one.
Ringside, an American Dairy Goat Podcast, is not an affiliate of the American Dairy Goat Association. All opinions or information regarding the ADGA does not represent the registry.